Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to switch gears and talk with you about tick-borne diseases. They've been slowly spreading throughout the U.S. in the last few decades, and Wisconsin certainly is no exception. Talking about Lyme disease and other tick-related illnesses now with our guest, Dr. Alexis Chesney. She's a naturopathic physician, an acupuncturist, an author, and educator. She speaks on topics of prevention, diagnosis, and treating Lyme and other tick-borne diseases. And she has a new book out on the topic. It's called Preventing Lyme and Other Tick-Borne Diseases. So what would you like to know about controlling ticks in your landscape, for example? Do you think you have an undiagnosed tick-borne disease? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Alexis Chesney with us by phone. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before we start talking about ticks, I'm curious, tell us about a naturopathic physician, how it may differ from traditional MD.
Sure. As a naturopathic physician, I went to a four-year medical school. I attended the University of Bridgeport in Connecticut, where we know can be seen as the home for Lyme disease, unfortunately. And so during that training, we learn about pharmaceuticals. We learn about conventional diagnosis and treatment of diseases, but we also get training in nutrition, botanical medicine, homeopathic medicine, counseling. And so those 2 out of the 4 years is really focused on those therapies. And then after that, I went to Vermont, and where I am now, and did a one-year residency, which was wonderful, and I've stayed on here at Sojourn's Community Health Clinic.
Really cool. How did you get, was it as part of the schooling that got you interested in this area, or was it something you've had held on to for a long time?
Well, I grew up knowing about Lyme disease, and then we saw cases certainly in school in Connecticut. And then unfortunately, a friend of mine developed some very bizarre symptoms and was diagnosed with Lyme and treated. So it got me curious in that medical way of thinking about, just how tricky this bacteria is and how it can affect the human body.
Well, if Connecticut is ground zero for ticks, Wisconsin is not far behind.
Absolutely. It's really affected the north central United States.
It's really a big time problem here in this state. And actually, Stephen in Madison has a question that relates to that, I think. Stephen, hello.
Hello.
Yeah, what's your question?
Well, I walk quite a bit outdoors in Madison, around the lakes and such, and I've often wondered, you know, I felt a little bump, and I don't know if it was from a twig or part of a tree or, you know, a little piece of wood or something. And I thought, well, I wonder if I don't feel good a lot of times now. I wonder if I have something. And if you mention it to your doctor, they think you're nuts. Isn't there a way they can test, you know, put that on the panel of things that they check if it's that horrible of a thing? And you live in a state such as this?
So testing for tick-borne diseases.
Right.
Yeah. Dr. Chesney, what do you think?
Well, I'm hearing two things, that, you know, seeing a bump on your skin, and usually the tick will attach for a long period of time until it falls off. So they can attach for 3 to 5 days. So occasionally in about 10% of ticks, they will detach sooner than that. So we do need to think about that. But usually if you have a tick bite, you will be able to find the tick. However, if you don't find the tick, of course, that is possible, and testing should be thought about. But I'm thinking of how you might notice a little lesion on your skin or something like that. So if there's a lesion found, that should be monitored, and having that history of being in the woods or knowing that you may have had exposure to ticks is important to bring that information to your doctor. And then, of course, testing can be complicated. There are a lot of different tests out there. Unfortunately, the Lyme ELISA test, which is the first test that's usually done, is less than 50% accurate. And sometimes a lot of confidence is put into this test, but if it's negative, it does not rule out Lyme disease. And everyone is in agreement with that. So there are better tests out there. I use a company called iGenX to do Western blots or immunoblots, which are much more sensitive, and so they will pick up the antibodies, and that's what's looked at in these tests for Lyme disease.
Oh, and interesting. Stephen, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Cheryl in Eau Claire, just turn to you next. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi there. I was wondering, for convenience sake, if we have our dogs getting a vaccine or a collar every year, why can't we get like a flu vaccine shot for Lyme's for people? It'd be so much easier.
What do you think?
Absolutely. I hear you. It seems to be a little more straightforward in veterinary medicine. There was a vaccine out called the Lymerix vaccine back around the year 2000, and it was only on the market for about a year. So there are, you know, a cohort of folks that had that vaccine. They ran into some difficulty with it, so it was taken off the market, and there are people, researchers, looking at trying to create a vaccine at this point that's more tolerated and better protective, yes.
So it's in the works, Cheryl, but we don't have a vaccine yet for it, unfortunately. I think there'd be a lot of vaccinations going on in Wisconsin, probably Connecticut, too, if they had a, if somebody ever comes up with a good one. Eric in Madison, your turn. Hi, Eric.
Hi. Thanks for my call. Yeah, I got or had chickens, and that was the end of the tick problem for me, and but I was curious, do chickens get Lyme's, or what prevents them from getting Lyme's? Because they eliminate the ticks, that's for sure.
Chickens and possums are pretty good at it, too. They love ticks.
But yeah, there's an interesting study looking at opossums, and only 3.5% of the ticks on the possums actually survived, compared to 50% of ticks that survived on mice when they did this study. So they're very fastidious creatures.
But what about chickens?
I joke about that. Chickens, yeah, they're somewhere in between mice and possum. So they're not as great, but they do have an impact. People have certainly reported that, and there's some research on that. So that certainly can make a difference.
But do they, would a chicken, you know, let's say a tick got in the, embedded in there, would could a chicken receive Lyme disease?
That I do not know. That is a good question.
That's not one that
I don't know if they would be symptomatic or if it bothers them or
Well, two ticks that we have the most of here in Wisconsin, I think, are the wood tick and the deer tick. And the wood tick is, you know, a pain in the butt, but the deer tick is the one that causes us the most problems, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the deer tick or the black-legged tick is more of an issue because it spreads Lyme disease. It also, in your area, which is really interesting, there's a different Borrelia that it can carry. So Borrelia burgdorferi is what causes Lyme disease. And then they also found a different Borrelia called Borrelia mayani, or they named it that, in your state. It was either Wisconsin or Minnesota in about 2011 that they discovered this. And so that is actually another cause for Lyme disease. So one of the issues is there can be more diseases, more pathogens that create these diseases caused by ticks that are going to be discovered in the future as well. But you're right to say Lyme disease is the biggest issue. And then following that would be something like babesiosis is the disease name, or anaplasma, which causes anaplasmosis in your area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lisa in Spring Green will give you a chance. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I just wanted to brighten everybody's day. I found a tick crawling on me this morning. we live on a wooded lot, but it's, you know, we're not you know, we don't have trees right up to the house, you know. I just went up out to get the paper this morning, and when I came back in, I had a little baby tick on me.
No.
So anyway, that was happy. But anyway, what I really wanted to talk about is in 2012, I found a tick on my head. But I've had, you know, we live out here in the woods, and I've had ticks forever. Anyway, so I picked it off, and then I've had the strangest symptoms ever since. Well, I got really, really sick after that. I completely and utterly lost my appetite. Completely. I was losing weight at, you know, it was an unbelievable rate, and I'm not, you know, I'm not a small person, okay? And my friend at work said, you have to go to the doctor because your eyes are sinking back into your head. Anyway, so I did, and they just gave me the regular regimen for Lyme disease, but I just, it was something else, you know, it was something else, but I, you know, the doctor, you know, didn't really want to talk about it. He just gave me a prescription for, you know, the 3-week antibiotic for Lyme disease.
But did you improve after that?
Oh, yeah, I got better.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. Thanks for calling. And that's something, that regimen is has been pretty successful, has it not, Dr. Chesney?
The regimen typically used to treat Lyme disease?
Yeah.
Well, actually, there are 10 to 20% of people that do not resolve their symptoms after treatment that's typically used. But I'm glad it sounds like she may be part of that larger cohort. Doxycycline is used typically. And the thing is, we know that there are different ways that Lyme exists in hide. And I think this is really important for people to know. That doxycycline only treats one of the ways that it exists. So this type of bacteria is called a spirochete. It's a very particular, unique bacteria. And the doxycycline does tend to get to some of those spirochetes, but it also has shown in studies to create a different form. They kind of...
You know what? We're going to break in here, Dr. Chesney, because we need to take a quick look at the news. Hang on to that thought, and we will get back in just a couple of minutes after the news and weather and finding out what else is in store for us. I'm Larry Mueller. You know, tick season will be in full swing very soon here today. And on the show, we're talking about how to control ticks, prevent infection, and treat bites. There's a good book out. It's called Preventing Lyme and Other Tick-Borne Diseases. Alexis Chesney, the author, Dr. Alexis Chesney, the author of the book, and she's our guest here on the show today. And I haven't talked with her much about the book yet. We will certainly get to that, but she is ready and able to answer your tick questions, and I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. And as we broke for news, Dr. Chesney, I believe you were talking about some of the treatment regimen for Lyme disease. And I'm not sure if we got through the whole thing or not. I believe almost.
Yeah, I think I was giving a description of the ways that Lyme can change form and hide in the body and making the doxycycline not always by itself effective in treatment. So we were talking about the spirochete, which is the type of bacteria Lyme is, and then how studies show that the doxycycline and certain antibiotics, when they're used, can certainly kill off some, but then also creates this round body or cyst form of the Borrelia. So this is a way that they kind of ball up in a round ball and hide from the immune system as well as the treatment that's coming their way. And then there's even another way that they hide, creating biofilm. These are communities that the Borrelia as well as other tick-borne pathogens can come together in the body, and they create a structure around themselves in order to then not be able to be seen by the immune system or receive antibiotic therapy. So in my book, I do talk about other, actually there are pharmaceuticals like Flagyl or tinidazole that can get to that round body form. And then I use a lot of herbal medicine. So there's Japanese knotweed and cat's claw and dragaeus. These both get to the spirochete form of Lyme as well as the round body form, which is great.
Yeah, and interesting book. And actually, I like the book. There's some great diagrams of a particularly interesting one of ticks as they're the known ticks and diagrams of them and what they look like when they're engorged, which is quite a difference. Man, and then identifying, you know, you got a whole section on identifying, you know, how do you know if you've got a problem and you know, what you can expect to happen and how to be treating for it. I like the fact that it's in the size of the book, too. It's a handy size and one that you can keep the kind of book that you're going to hang on to for a while.
Yeah, I hope so. I really wanted to help equip people to be able to identify ticks and know which one they may have been bitten by, and, of course, prevent the tick bites in the first place. But if they were bitten by a tick, to be able to know what tick it is it one that carries pathogens to save the tick because you can send it out for tick testing to see if it's actually carrying any of those pathogens, and then to watch for symptoms, to know what to look out for, when to call your physician or practitioner.
And then also just controlling, it's kind of interesting to see how you can reduce tick habitat just around your own home. Got some nice diagrams in there, too.
Thank you. I'm so glad. Yeah, there are these little tick cards that you can pop out that are color, in color, and you can take them with you. And then some diagrams on, like, for instance, making your own tick tubes. I don't know if people know much about that, but permethrin is shown to kill ticks on contact and also repel them. So it's a very useful strategy. And then specifically, making tick tubes, which you can buy or you can make them yourself, is a way to target the mouse population, because the mouse population is usually what gives a tick Lyme or the Borrelia burgdorferi pathogen to the tick in the first place. You know, the ticks are not born with Borrelia burgdorferi, so they attach to a small animal like a mouse first, and that's where they acquire the pathogen, which they could then attach to us later and transmit. So these tick tubes, you basically get some cotton or lint from your dryer, you spray permethrin on them, using gloves, being safe, because you want to be cautious with your skin contact. And then you let that dry and put them in little tubes, like if you were to save a paper towel tube or toilet tissue tube. And then you put them out. They're biodegradable. You put them out in your landscape, you know, your yard, in places where mice might be. And it has shown to decrease the amount of ticks found in the yard by 93%. It's pretty amazing.
That's really, really cool. I love that idea. John in Racine has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
My friend's a landscaper, and he was talking to me about when he uses wood chips. I guess ticks really hate wood chips. They'll get lost inside of them when they try to cross it or enter it. And then my other comment was, I don't know if Dr. Chesney knows that the Mayo Clinic and the Marshfield Clinic here in Wisconsin, they actually test you for the tick DNA. It's a much better test than the current test. It has a much better outcome as far as detecting the Lyme's disease, because it's only on like one current tick variety. So that's a DNA to test for.
Huh. Are you familiar with that testing procedure, Dr. Chesney?
Yeah, the DNA or PCR testing for tick-borne diseases, absolutely. That is a good test when it's an acute illness. So right after becoming infected is when that test is useful. But sometimes I see people who may have been sick longer. You know, after a month around that time, the PCR is often not as accurate in a lot of these diseases. So then we look at things like Western blot or immunoblot testing.
Thanks again for that call. I should mention, too, that I interviewed someone from the Tick-Borne Illness Center of Excellence in Woodruff, Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin. It's a Open Medicine Institute from the Howard Young Institute are a part of it. They're funding it, and they're looking at and treating people with tick-borne diseases and doing a lot of research on it. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it or not.
I have just heard about it, and I do know Brian Fallon and Neil Spector, who are incredible physicians and researchers. So I think that you are in good hands because of that. So I'm so glad that that exists in Wisconsin and look forward to hearing more about it.
Duane in Dodgeville has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Duane.
Hi. Last spring, I was out in the woods. I'm a land surveyor, so I'm out in the woods a lot. And I got 12 ticks on me that I believe to be deer ticks. Went and saw my doctor because I developed a rash on my leg. I never had a bullseye. And he just put me on an antibiotic treatment, and he never tested me before or after. I'm going to see him in a couple weeks for an intestinal issue. Should I ask him to actually get tested for Lyme disease, or being a year out, has it gone dormant?
How long were you on the treatment?
Oh, it was quite a long time. I think about a month. It really tore up my stomach.
Yeah, so that's always one question that I ask people. So with a rash, the first thing to mention is that the rash is not always a perfect bullseye. So when you get a rash, which is less than 50% of the time with Lyme, it's really helpful because then it alerts you, oh, there's a problem. Let me get this checked out. And there's a rash guide at the back of the book in color, which kind of helps people see that it can look different ways. But you've received some treatment. So in my perspective, I see that, you know, if it was an antibiotic for a month, that may not be long enough to address the current Lyme, if that's what's going on. I mean, I can't certainly diagnose or treat you here now, and to talk to your doctor is the best thing to do. So, you know, testing might be appropriate for you at this point. But since you've already had some treatment, it can interfere with making antibodies. So the test is not going to be as accurate due to that as well. So a lot of times in these cases, I would look at symptoms. And if I'm seeing people, you know, hey, I had a rash, it looks like a Lyme rash, and a fever, flu-like symptoms, joint or muscle pains, headaches, you know, new symptoms like that all around, some tick bites, and it sounds like you had quite a few, then I would look at doing more treatment and adding something to get to the round form and adding something to get to the biofilm so that we can really be comprehensive about it.
And boy, you're exactly right. Those photos, those color photos that you have in the book of the rashes, I mean, they're kind of a little all over the place. I mean,
yeah,
you can't just figure on the bullseye, perfect bullseye as the... the only way to have it show up.
Exactly, yeah, and I think that's a misnomer that's out there. So I wanted to get the word out to people and to have visuals so that they could identify this on themselves. And on that note, you know, tick checks are so important. You know, there's so many people that come in after, you know, their partner found a tick on their back, or, you know, their massage therapist found a tick on them. You know, so it's so important to have somebody checking you, if not yourself, using a mirror and doing the best you can through sight, and also, you know, through palpation. If you get used to, you know, which moles you have and what your body landscape is like, that can help too for people who have poor eyesight. But yeah, then if there's a rash, you know, that's really helpful. If you do know that it was around the site of a tick bite, and to watch it. I also tell people to draw a line around the perimeter of the rash, because typically, whether it's a bullseye or not, the Lyme rash will expand outward. So it can get distorted as it kind of expands outward over your skin, over body parts. But if you draw a line around that initial rash that you see, and if you see some kind of somewhat circular pattern, oval pattern, usually it comes in that sort of centrifugal way of moving outward. And then that's going to also clue you into, hey, it might be a Lyme rash.
Dennis in Two Rivers will give you a chance now. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, I've got a scenario for you. Since ticks can be on us and we won't feel them, they can bite us, we won't feel them, Let's say I find a tick on me. How do I know if it's bitten me or if it hasn't? Maybe it's already bitten me and detached. How would I know?
If it bit you and detached, it would just fall off, so it wouldn't be crawling on you anymore, most likely. So they usually stay on, except for that 10% of ticks, like I mentioned. They usually stay on for 3 to 5 days, and then they'll drop off, and they're going to be incapable of moving at that point because they're going to be so full and digesting that meal. But if you find one crawling, I think the chances are it probably did not bite you. But, you know, again, that 10% of ticks, it could be. So, you know, we do need to remember that. But you're right to say we don't always feel the ticks. We don't always see the tick bites. So prevention being so important for those reasons, I think looking at, you know, doing repellents, doing some permethrin treatment of your clothing and your shoes, being really careful about where you walk and doing those tick checks is so important.
Yeah, for sure. That permethrin on the clothes, I think, is very helpful. Thanks again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks again for calling, Dennis. Appreciate it. Linda in Madison, your turn. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I had Lyme's disease about 3 years ago. Well, first of all, I had it, and I had a rash all over my side. That was the first time, and I wasn't that sick. Second time, I got very sick. I started with a fever. My legs swelled up with a ton of water in them, so I could barely walk. And then I got even sicker. I have that Lyme fog. And I lost weight by the minute, and it hurt my liver, and I was anemic, and I had palsy in my jaw where I couldn't eat for 3 days. And then the thing that bothered me the most was I had these wiggle things in my eyes.
Hmm.
And then I had to argue with the doctors, two of them, that I had Lyme's, and, I'm from Madison. I mean, they need to be educated a little bit more down here.
So are those symptoms, Dr. Chesney, are those kinds of symptoms things that you have seen with people with Lyme disease?
Sure. Something like a rash, the fever, palsy. Yeah. Occasionally I've seen people have swelling. It could be a swollen joint, but it sounds like more it was like the entire leg. But those things can come up. Typical symptoms would be new joint or muscle pains, new tingling, numbness, burning, odd sensations like that. But it can present in so many ways. Lyme is called the great imitator because it can present in so many ways.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry for your problems there, Linda.
Sounds like a terrible time you had there.
Oh, yeah. Man. Thanks for calling. John in Madison, your turn. Hi, John.
I think I quite often hike up on Pheasant Branch Hill, and I always check for ticks. I came back, checked for ticks. This is several years ago. Go to bed in the morning. Several hours later, I see a little tick crawling around on me. It was not fed. I mean, it was just like a very small tick. Do some people have objectionable? Do not taste good to ticks, or some people just ticks don't bite them.
There's a lot of reasons I can think of. Dr. Chesney, maybe you can comment.
I don't know. Yeah, some people say, "Hey, I'm a tick magnet." You know, they all come to me, and they never get on my friend, my partner, or something like that. But I don't know. I think you got lucky there.
Yeah,
maybe you brought it in on some clothing or some equipment, or if you have pets, you know, those they bring in ticks too. So
yeah, there's a lot of ways that tick could, and you know, just if you've got to examine yourself, I mean, it's. You have to be an acrobat almost and have some mirrors and everything else to really check yourself completely. And if they're in your hair or whatever, you may not notice them right away. And then you go to bed and then they just start wandering. That can happen.
Sure, absolutely.
That can happen too. So there's a lot of reasons for it, but maybe you're one of the lucky ones, John, and ticks just don't like you. That'd be pretty nice to have that sort of capability to repel ticks. Oh, man. Yep. Thanks again for calling. Alicia in Duluth, Your turn. Hi, Alicia.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Dr. Chesney. My question, and this is regarding my late sister, she had Lyme's disease for many, many years, and I am wondering what some of the long-term issues, health issues, medical issues might be if Lyme's disease is not caught, not cured, not gone into remission. What are some of the things that could happen to a person?
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that about your sister. I deal with a lot of folks that have chronic illness. So that's how I started with treating people and picking up Lyme disease is mostly chronic issues. And then we find out sometimes fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, chronic pain in general can actually be caused by Lyme disease and other tick-borne diseases. And so getting history and seeing if they've had tick bites or a lifestyle which could allow for a tick without knowing it is really important. And then we do testing, and sometimes we find that. And I've had plenty of patients who have done well with treatment and resolved their symptoms, which is great. It's not always 100% of the picture. So I think it's really important to try and wade through the symptoms and trying to differentiate what's Lyme and what's not, right? Somebody had an injury, they have a shoulder injury, they have a problem there. Okay, that might not be Lyme, but all these other bizarre pains and other symptoms have come up. And, you know, they've seen many physicians. I've had a lot of patients who have been to many, many specialists. And then I see them after that and we find out, oh, you know, you did have a history of tick bites, or you had that Lyme rash that was treated with 2 weeks of doxycycline and you haven't felt well since. So, you know, sometimes there's some obvious history in there and sometimes not, and we can investigate if it feels appropriate with some testing and then some treatment trials to see if there's a response.
Alicia, thank you so much. Mark in Wisconsin Dells, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I had Lyme disease probably 30-some years ago. I started with a big old bullseye right over my vastus lateralis on my leg, and the symptoms that I had after that were joint pain in my elbows. And the reason I started to complain was I couldn't hardly carry a shotgun for very long before I had to switch hands during turkey season. You might laugh about that, but that's true. And, then later, I went to see my doctor, and we had the doxycycline and took care of that. And then I had the state of Louisiana paid for me to have the three-shot vaccine.
The three-shot vaccine, is that a good approach, Dr. Chesney?
Oh, well, that's probably the vaccine that I was talking about. That, yeah. Was that around near 2000?
Yeah.
Well, it was before that, I think, and... yeah, it was before that, probably. I don't know how many years, but it was, 30 days apart for the first two and then a year later.
Right. Yeah, that's how they did it.
And that's what the vaccine that you were talking about. So that works.
Well, it's no longer, they had trouble with it, so it's no longer on the market.
I got it.
And so I can't speak to, how that
whether or not it
really today.
Yeah. Well, your book certainly is has got a lot of great information about controlling and about preventing and about treating, Dr. Chesney. And I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It's been a lot of fun. I bet the book's been selling well.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful. I do want to help Wisconsin end Lyme through prevention. So I hope this equips you in doing so.
Thanks again, Dr. Alexis Chesney. Her book, Preventing Lyme and Other Tick-Borne Illnesses. Great to have her with us, and certainly great to have you listening in today. I really always appreciate it. Tomorrow, our home improvement specialist, Chad Spate, joins us to take your questions. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.